Hi, Danielle.
Hi,
Welcome back.
Leslie.
Our podcast here at Transform Together. This is our time we set aside to connect with one another and to tell some stories and reflect and capture these moments in time for ourselves, but also for our audience. And today we're really excited to introduce Alex, who's part of our team. Danielle, maybe you want to do just a little welcome to Alex
Oh, yes.
get
Hi.
the audience up to speed.
Hi, Alex. It's great to have you here. Alex DeSorzi has finally joined us and has a lot to offer our clients, but mostly we're just really lucky to have a like-minded soul here, a kindred spirit who loves to chit-chat just as much as we do. So welcome, Alex. And I was just wondering if you wanted to just like tell us where you're at in this point in time, like how your journey's been to get to what you're doing today.
Well, and thank you guys so much for having me. It'll be really interesting to finally record some of our fun conversation. In terms of where I'm at, still developing as a therapist. So I've been with Transform Together, I think just about kind of 5 months now under contract, maybe 4 months under contract, but met Leslie and Danielle last fall through a mutual friend, Yaya, which was wonderful. I've been working out in Renfrew County with the Phoenix Center. I've been doing a lot of work with kids there, a lot of trauma work, but my work with Leslie and Danielle at Transform Together is more towards kind of teenage boys looking at anxiety, depression. From kind of my entire history of life, I love incorporating nature. I love incorporating philosophy. I think it answers a big question for me and for my clients of what happens after therapy? Where do we go? And in terms of where I'm trying to go at this moment is to kind of continue to develop my private practice. So continue to do individual sessions with a whole slew of clients. And in addition to that, I'm looking to develop a couple of different programs. So kind
Oh,
of
and
nature.
we will get into that. That is the juicy parts right there.
That is the big juice.
Yeah, oh, there's so many good juicy parts. I think what drew me and drew Leslie and I to you was this marriage of working with teens and young men and working in nature. I think that really spoke to me, and I wondered if you could share what you shared with us a little bit about your philosophy around the power of nature and how it can transform kids, really. You're magical when you talk about this. Can you go there again?
I will do my best. My parents tell me I talk too much, but I'll do my best, Danielle.
Oh, well, I don't think.
So, what began with my connection with nature is I worked at a camp for about 6 years, and in that camp, that's where my thoughts of adventures they do for kids when they become or rather go into these like vulnerable spaces of, oh my goodness, I'm up on a climbing wall. And what that does is one, it allows for the kid to be able to connect with a counselor because there you're helping to kind of regulate just as a therapist does. You're there going, yeah, you can do it. Take a deep breath. You're part of their team. But it also does this amazing kind of developing thing that, okay, I can do this. I've got this in my cookie jar. Okay, I've completed this. I've gotten to the top of the wall. And I think a lot with nature, whether it's, again, going climbing or shooting a bow and arrow or something as simple as making a fire, you have this feel, yeah, somewhat self-reliant, and you build confidence there. And I think there's also a lot of lessons that you kind of draw. And again, go back into that cookie jar of, I did this hard thing a while ago. Okay, I can probably do this new hard thing now.
That is brilliant. Hey, Leslie, I can see
I'm
you're
wondering,
smiling.
yeah, I think this would be such a cool thing to reflect on ourselves. Like, what do we have those moments ourselves? I'm thinking myself of being in about grade 10 and being part of an outdoor adventure leadership program. And although I had broken my new hiking boots, I still got such bad blisters on the hike in the Adirondacks that the second day of hiking, I actually had to stay at base camp and I didn't get to go. And like, what kind of experience that was to be self-sufficient at 16, all by myself at base camp while everybody else got to hike to the mountain, right? So like, even those moments of not success, perceived success, right? Moments that felt kind of like failure, You know, the actual thing for me at that age and stage, and still the work I need to practice, is the what happens when you don't get to climb the mountain? What happens when you have to sit and wait for other people to come back? What will you do with all that time? And so, yeah, it just made me think, like, what are some examples of those, formative moments that we might have had in nature, or being shaped by nature? I know, Dan, you did a lot of guiding, hey, and being.
Yeah, I did. And that's what is coming up for me right now around. I did Girl Guides right up until I was like 17, and even helped lead through a couple of my university years. But the best part about being in nature for me, Alex and Leslie, is that I learned at a very young age, and I'm really actually quite competent out in the wild. It doesn't bother me. In fact, I feel pretty in my zone out there, and which was really important at that stage because, you know, a lot of other stuff going on with the family and, you know, parents breaking up and all of that. But between 13 and 17, being a girl guide, a brownie girl guide, pathfinder, out in the wild, in the woods, I had all the skills that I needed to, I learned all the skills. I didn't feel like I couldn't learn them, that I wasn't held back. I could do anything out in the, out in nature, and it just calmed me right down. So, the work that you're doing and that you want to do, with teen boys or young men, is so important to feel that mastery and control of oneself, independent of all the other things that are telling you, no, you can't do it. I just think it's amazing. Yeah.
Yay. What about you, Alex? Do you have a moment that you'd be willing to share where nature did it for you, or the circumstances created that magic for you that you create with your clients?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to pick one moment because I think there's a lot of moments I've had with kids and even with adults where, again, like there's this bonding and you go through hardship together and you overcome it like nothing else, right? Where it's like, okay, I can rely on this person, I can rely on myself.
Mm-hmm.
And to speak to both of you, you know, what you've brought to nature, like everything else is, it's just nature. It's the here and now. Like everything else becomes kind of tertiary and not important. To speak to like a personal experience with nature, I'll pick two. And I think it goes to the whole adversity promotes adaptation thing. Like being out in nature and doing hard stuff, it's hard and it hurts. And you have to be aware of the dangers because the hospital is not around the corner. And so you build up that resiliency in yourself. I do a fair amount of wrong. And with that, you have to build a lot of resiliency. And that's my favorite thing, that I'm going to try something. I will probably try maybe 100 times and I will fail. And, you know, I could sit at base camp like Leslie did, and I could say, this sucks. I'm not doing this ever again. I'm never coming back. And I can be quite upset. Or I can go, okay, well, what am I going to do with myself now? Yeah. Like, can I make a slight modification here?
Yeah.
Can I pick up a little win and not give up? And I think, you know, my other moment is, you know, going hiking, and sometimes you're out there and you're tired and you get blisters, this, that, whatever. And you go, okay, well, you know, no one's going to come for me. Like, I need to get to where to get by myself.
Yep.
And I'm going to go through some pain, and then you keep going and you go, okay, well, I can handle the suffering. And again, it builds that mental resiliency. And of course, you're always rewarded with a nice view. But yeah. I think it's just like that part in nature that it just exposed me to, like, hey, man, you got to keep going. We got to figure it out. Take a deep breath, take stock, and move forward.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you think it is about our current experience of the world? And maybe this is a sociological question. I don't know. Maybe this is like one of those post-COVID speculation moments. But like, what do you think it is about the way we're living now that makes there be such a deficit that we need to fill, right? Like we're, yeah. Why now, right? Do we see young people? Are they really any different than the deficits we had, right? And the needs we had? Like, do you think things are the same? Do you think they're different? Do you think this has always been needed? I don't know. Whatever angle you want to come at, that could be a philosophical question. Like, however you want to take that.
It's a really good question, Leslie. Danielle, do you want to go first? Do you have your answer? Or?
Well, I have my answer because I'm at a different stage in my life now because I've raised three kids and they're like young adults now. I see where They had different pressures than I did because there were no computers when I was growing up. You know, parents let us run outside all day. In fact, let us is a you know, that's kind of a misnomer. They told us to get outside and only come back for lunch and lights out, which is very different from what you know, the kids of today have experienced. And I didn't have the pressures of social media on me, so I wasn't constantly worried about what other people thought of me in the large, you know, sort of global sense. Whereas I think that pressure is really there for our kids. And I expect, and I see that pressure on them. I see them thinking that they need to, you know, they must succeed because everybody else has succeeded on social media. And that's just not the reality. So that's my take, that I do think it's a little bit different. They still have to learn the same set of values and the same set of, you know, competencies that we have to, but with the added pressure of feeling like they're not quite there because social media. So what do you think, Alan? Have I given you enough time to think?
Yeah, you've given me enough time to think, Danielle. I agree wholeheartedly with a lot of your points. I mean, biologically, like, we haven't changed into different humans over the last, you know, 30 years, sadly not that quick.
Right.
But it's a lot of differences. And I think in a good way, a lot of hardships have been removed from life. Like, we've been given a lot. It's not saying that life is not hard. By all means, right, life is still very hard. Depending on, you know, socioeconomic status, you go through a bunch of different hurdles.
Yeah.
But there are certain people or certain companies that are very, very intelligent. We often see that minority can manipulate the majority.
Yeah.
So with social media, yeah, there's that comparison, but it's also these quick and instant, like, dopamine hits.
Yes.
And I think with a lot of things, you can do that. Like, that's so available to people. And again, companies are very, very intelligent of how they approach it.
Yeah.
So resiliency is not this thing that's, you know, gone out. Like, if you send, you know, Danielle, when you were a kid, you got sent out, you're dealing with your friends, you guys go through a fight, there's no parents around, you guys got to learn to deal with it.
Yeah.
But now everything is there. And so their support, which is good, but then the independence, the resiliency is maybe not built to the same level. You really have to go out, look for it, and choose to develop that. Because on the opposite end, it's really easy to stay home and scroll through social media and go on Netflix and,
yeah,
and do that, which we all need sometimes. But
yeah, we all, yeah. But you raise a really good point around we've policied everything to death, so much so that our kids are protected from themselves in some ways, and don't have the community building skills, the, you know, mediation skills, all of the things that we need to actually live and be humans in, you know, in the same way that we had, you know, that I certainly had, I was forced to do. But it doesn't mean that it's not possible. Like, that's where I think, yeah, I see you're saying, you're nodding too, because that's where we as a group, like, as transformed together and individually with our skill sets, are constantly trying to instill in our clients that they can do that, that we can tap on the skills and the resiliencies, the well of resiliency they already have to bring that forward. And each of us does that, which I love.
So I'm really interested also, Alex, in that intersection between, you know, uncovering or discovering resiliency and learning resilience, mm-hmm. right? Because to me, when we add that piece of learning to be resilient, mm-hmm. right, this is where being in nature is so useful, because as we know, like, the environmental conditions for learning, right, like, it plays a relationships play a big part, right, in mm-hmm. whether people can be in that zone of development where they can actually learn something. And the environment matters a lot. And when you're in nature, the environment becomes an even bigger, like, bigger factor. And so you can actually get a lot further. So I would joke in the past and say, like, camp time is different than city time. Yeah. What happens in a day at camp takes like 3 weeks in the real world, mm-hmm. right? And partly that's because of the experience, the immersive experience of being, like, outdoors from sunrise to sunset.
Yeah.
right? So my, the environment shapes your learning, shapes your experiences just by you being in it. And maybe I've just like made a kind of vague random connection in there, but just, you know, from starting in one place and ending up camp time. But actually, to me, I spent a lot of time thinking about like that zone of proximal development, right? The place that people, it can't be too hard, right? And we've all had moments in nature where things were too hard and we developed resiliency because it was, you know, as a reaction, right? Like after the fact, well, it's, I'm resilient now after that fiasco. But just this idea of learning in nature and that role that environments can play. I wonder if, like, is there a particular skill that you're looking forward to helping people learn that being in nature is going to help make that skill, I don't know, easier to master, but more conducive maybe to learning?
So that's an amazing question, Leslie. It's a hard time answering, but I'll do my
best.
That's
fine. You wouldn't be the first person who's like, no, I'm going to pass on that. That vague thought was, no, I will not pick that up.
So I think there are certain skills. Now, for the fall, I know I've spoken to Leslie and Danielle, but for the viewers at home, kind of first step in me developing my, you know, my wilderness, my adventure therapy course, I'm looking to do something between parents and just 4 or 5 sets of them. We're going to go out in nature. I've even thought about doing almost now the purpose of kind of doing something like foraging or doing something like canoeing is kind of twofold. One, nothing unites people like a common enemy. And in this sense, the common enemy is nature, right?
Yes.
Because, you know, going down a river, it can be cold, it can be hard, you can go through rapids. If it's a cold day outside, building a fire, surviving, you learn to rely on the other person and you develop and foster that connection. So especially between parents and kids, it's always connection before correction.
Yeah.
Like that is the basis of all attack. The other thing, and this is something I love doing with my teenage client, is drawing parallels. And so if you can kind of learn one thing, apply it to a lot of others. So for example, if we would do foraging, a lot of relationships are like gardens. People can be like different plants or flowers. They can be tended to in each of their individual ways. That's something I see and discuss with our intensive service worker in my other job, where, we have these principles, but the way you do your dance or you have your garden is going to be different. They might both be successful. They're going to use the same ideologies, but you might approach it in a different way, and that's okay. And that's how we often need to look at people. So I think there's a lot of parallels there. And one of my favorite quotes is, if you know the way broadly, you will see it in all things.
Yes.
So if you learn something from a sport, parents out there, if you can get your kids in sports or extracurriculars, you make your therapist's job a lot easier because they build resilience. They learn how to do teamwork. They learn how to, you know, come back from a loss. They you take all these lessons and, okay, well, I can apply this to school. I need to spend more time practicing. I need to change how I approach things. I need to talk to a teammate or a friend to get some tutoring. You can draw a lot of parallels and learn and grow from that. So I hope that answers your question, Leslie.
Yeah, no.
That's great.
That's fantastic. The idea of having an event for parents and kids to learn that together and to be amongst the great equalizer of nature is fantastic. Yeah, I'm really, really excited for you to do that and love your philosophy, drawing parallels and connection before correction. Me too. Now, I've just wondered if we could switch gears a little bit, because I'm wondering about this business and idea of your niche being focused on teenage boys or men or people of the male persuasion. And I wondered if you wanted to take a moment with us just to help for our listeners understand why this focus is so important. And we'll say about why we want to support you in it as well. But I'd love for people to understand that particular niche and why it's so
important. It's important to me because, well, all of us go through our own mental health journeys, right? And they're all individual. They're all different. Again, they can take similar qualities, but they're individual.
Yeah.
Now, me growing up when I did mine, obviously there's not as much representation of a male presence in the therapeutic field. Not saying that there's not, but you go in psychology today, about 90-95% are going to be female. And even when I joined my, when I first started becoming a therapist, I was the only guy in my entire organization.
Oh my God.
And I think I remember after the first week, because, you know, they send me teenage boys because, well, again, I connect with that. Like, that's part of me. They have a different journey, but I can still connect with a part of myself that did struggle, that I was at that point of being a teenager that had no idea where I was going, that had stuff going on in my head that I didn't understand. And so providing that was wonderful. And I remember driving home one day and I just felt the like vindication of me doing the right thing, being able to connect with these kids and give them an outlet. It's always been something I guess had somewhat of a natural talent. Like I said, I worked multiple years at a camp.
Yeah.
And, you know, was always there for my co-counselors, but also for those kids and connecting with them. And I saw the difference I could make. And it just kind of made me feel good. And when we talk philosophy, because a big part about how I lived my life and how I, as a person in my late teens to my early 20s, was reading philosophy, trying to engage in it, obviously not being perfect, teenage boy, I'll be honest, but trying to engage and having this concept of, you know, tending to myself, like being happy with myself at the end of the day and going after that like true eudaimonic happiness. And that's something that caring for people, supporting people has always given me.
Mm-hmm.
Just seen such a need in the field for, okay, like I want to maybe been through my experience, not the exact same, but can connect and understand the perspective of a male going through these things.
Yeah, absolutely. So important that work be done. And I'll tell you why. And I know, Leslie, you have some thoughts about this too. First of all, both Leslie and I have raised or are raising men. And we know that there are not a lot of pointers and markers out there for young people in general. Doesn't matter what the gender is, but for young people to really understand how it is they can live into their values, live into who they are as people, regardless of what other people say. And then there's this interesting little thing that happens with boys and men. They have a pressure, in my opinion, to perform or be a certain way, very macho, very blah, blah, blah. Like all of that rhetoric is out there that tells them that all, from the get-go, that they're not going to be enough right away, that they're not going to be able to be exactly who this people want them to be. And I think the work that you're doing, and certainly the work that I do with my own clients around, unpacking their traumas from when they were younger, is to like dispel all that myth stuff. There's, mm-hmm. There's no such thing as the perfect man or the perfect woman. There's no such thing. There is the perfect person. You know, there is that perfect person mm-hmm. that is underneath all of us. And when I hear you say phrases like tend to my soul, I mm-hmm. know that means you're also tending to the souls of these young people that you're working with. And in particular, allowing young people, young men, to lean into who they are,
mm-hmm.
Who they authentically are. And that's why I think the work that you're doing is so important. That's really what I think. Leslie, you too, though. What do you think?
I'm reflecting on a story one of my teenagers told me. And everybody's deciding what program to take, right? It's like off to university or college or working or whatever. And everybody's got some idea of what they're going to do or who they're going to be. And my kid is very unsure about what he's going to be. But he's pretty sure about who he is.
Yeah.
And a great example is that he's decided he's going to take philosophy at university, which mm-hmm. we support. And his friends were teasing him. I do believe it was teasing. I do believe they are his friends teasing him. Well, we're going to be engineers and we're going to be this. And, you know, what are you going to do with a philosophy degree? And he very quickly said, I'm going to be sitting on the board of the company deciding whether the things you made are good for society or not.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for the way he said that is true to who he is in the friend group, I think, which is the guy who's judging people. Right? Actually, he is the know-it-all in the group who's saying, oh man, that match is not going to work. I don't think the two of you should keep going together. Or, right? Like he really is in touch with this sense that he cares about what's right and wrong, and that he wants to think deeply about that, and that other people don't care so much as he cares about those things, right? And so he allowing himself to not be worried about the future in the way that society tells all young people, but in a particular kind of way for young men, that they have to be somebody in particular in order to count, right? I just thought it was such a great moment of illustration, like that you can be turning back towards yourself, mm-hmm. and knowing yourself in order to soothe yourself in that sort of stress and dissonance, right, of mm-hmm. who you're supposed to be, and a little bit of razzing mm-hmm. from your engineering buddies, soon to be engineers. Yeah.
The fact that he could see that, though, about himself, mm-hmm. and articulate it. Oh, your work so is cool. done. Your work is done, Leslie.
Yeah. And Alex, you'll love that we were looking at the list of courses for September for first year. And my kid said, I could take any of these. And I thought, that's also a great sign, right? Because the mm-hmm. best part, I don't know mm-hmm. about you, but for me, the best part about university was the reading the course catalog and the picking some courses, showing up for the first day and getting the syllabus and just imagining learning those things. Everything after that was not as fun. But up to that point, the possibility, right? And the thought that you're going to make yourself more into more of yourself somehow, and mm-hmm. that there's ways to do that. It's just so intoxicating. So to get that sense that he might see it too is pretty exciting. It's a great time to be parenting, Miles.
Yeah.
So I'm mindful of our time together today and how Alex is going to be back to tell us more things as the journey grows. And this is a snapshot of where we are in Alex, maybe all of us, you and we could all think about this. Is there some little reminder that we want to leave with, you know, like, remember when we listen to this in the future, we want to remind ourselves, you know, tell future Alex a little something about what it was like to be at the beginning of your building your own practice and being part of the.
It is too, like, figuring I'm going to have learned, especially on what, wouldn't it be as excited about every day as getting a new syllabus?
What a great line. Every day is like getting a new syllabus. I love that. Danielle, is there anything you want to capture in the moment, like what it's like to be doing this work right now?
It's just wonderful to see you unfold and for you to bring us along with you as you learn new skills and new aha moments. It's just lovely that we're together to go and do this. I think that's all.
And my takeaway for today is thinking about your metaphor there, Alex, about tending the garden of other people and tending the garden of ourselves and all the different flowers and shapes. It's that season outside, and thinking about what that's like on the inside is a great moment of reflection for me. So I'm going to hold on. So thanks for spending time with us today. I'm so grateful to have connected with the two of you. And until next time.
Have a great
Bye,
day.
Alex. Bye, Danielle.